Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of five-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Shop Tommy John's Friends and Family Sale right now and get 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Myrtle Beach. You know what's better than getting away to a beach? Getting together at the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. They've got over 2,000 restaurants, live music playing all day and night, and endless attractions. This place was made for playing hard and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 Miles Where You Belong. The beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
The Podfix Network.
Hello and welcome to episode 212 of the Filmmakers Podcast. This is a podcast where we talk filmmaking from indie film to studio films and everything in between. How to get them made, how to make them, and how to try not to F it up, in our very, very humble opinion. I am Giles Alderson and I'm delighted to have on as our special guest today, Matthew Butlerhart and Tori Butlerhart. Hello!
Hey!
Hello. Hello, Giles. Thanks for having us.
Oh, absolute pleasure. It is an absolute pleasure. We're here to talk about your brand new film, Infinitum, Subject Unknown.
And you said it the British way, not yes. The American way.
Infinitum?
Infinitum. I think that's what they're saying.
Right, well, that's kind of cool too.
Either's good.
Oh, yeah, either's good.
Absolutely.
Either is great. I can't wait to dive into that. Matthew and Tori Butlerhart have been on this podcast before. They've been on episode 29 and 30, talking all about Two Down. So if you want to go back and dive into the past, there'll be links in the show notes. You can. We'll probably also touch on The Isle as well, which was their feature that came out last year. And they have made Infinitum, or Infinitum, Subject Unknown, in the lockdown with just the two of them. This is amazing. We'll get to all that. I cannot wait. But before we do, we have a competition, don't we, boys and girls? Yes, we do. So you've already heard about this. I forgot to plug it last week because I'm an idiot. With the episode with Jessica Hines. By the way, thank you all so much for your support and love on that episode. And Jessica obviously is an amazing actress, but she directed a feature film, The Fight, her debut feature, and we dive straight into that, which is amazing. So if you haven't listened to that, do go listen to that after you've listened to this. But our competition this week is we've teamed up with Greenlit to bring you this competition, and it's Greenlit, if you don't know, is a crowdfunding platform. Have you guys done crowdfunding?
We did a little bit for The Isle, but but having someone like Greenlit, to be perfectly honest, would definitely have helped us quite a lot. To be fair,
yeah, it definitely would, because what Greenlit are is very specialised towards filmmakers. It's, you know, Indiegogo and Kickstarter are brilliant platforms, but they don't necessarily target for filmmakers. Greenlit is specifically for that. And Peter, they're fantastic people. They're really supportive. So we thought we'd team up with them to help you if you want to do a crowdfunder at the moment. And we're going to pick three lucky winners, picked at random, tomorrow. Picked at random tomorrow, so this is pretty much the last day, and maybe tomorrow morning, to get your entries in. And what you win is 2 hours one-on-one consultancy with Peter Story and the Greenlit team. 2 hours to talk all about how to launch your crowdfunding campaign. You also get a half an hour Zoom with me. I mean, wow, you can talk about anything you want. I have no idea what that could be, but I hope it's about filmmaking rather than how you grow peas in the garden. Because I don't know. But this competition, it's not all. You don't just get me for half an hour. The three winners will also get free access to the rest of 2021, to all the events from our friends at Cine Circle. Loads of networking events covering filmmaking and beyond, and their Women in Film community and showcases, some of the most popular out there. But that is still not all, ladies and gentlemen. Everyone that enters can join a special free invite-only Greenlit/Filmmakers Podcast event called 10 Myths of Crowdfunding Your Film. Everyone who enters does get that. So you might as well enter. This is a free competition, everyone. So enter. It is thefilmmakerspodcast.com/competition. Links will be in the show notes. There you go. Competition plugged. Couple of shout-outs I need to do. Our co-hosts, Lucinda Rhodes-Takra and Ian Sharp, are embarking on the last week of their latest feature film, Code of Silence, this week. So we just wanted to wish them a huge good luck for the final week. Good luck, you two. Hope it goes really, really well. And also, we have a shout out to Lee Preston. He got in touch about his crowdfunder that he's doing right now for his feature film, The Cabin Below a Diamond Sky. It's directed by Alex Colburn and written by Juliet Holmes, produced by Lee Preston. And Lee Preston is producing it. The film is about Kath. She's a mobile hairdresser and petty thief. And she must fight for freedom from a gaslighting partner. Now, as you know, on the Filmmakers Podcast, we always support indie filmmakers. If you're going to get in touch with us and say you've got a crowdfunder, say you've got a film that you want us to shout out, we will do that. Lee got in touch and we are shouting out his film, The Cabin Below a Diamond Sky. They are at about 70% at the moment, and they are very close to their target, but they need your help. Link to that is in the show notes. If you have anything you can spare, please do. If nothing else, go to their Twitter page and retweet it. Good luck, Lee and team. Good luck to you. Oh, and also next week, we have on the director, Christopher Smith. He is known for the fantastic feature film Creep and for the amazing feature film Triangle. And he is on to not only talk about those, but to talk about his brand new feature film, The Banishing. So that's next week for you. How exciting. I'm super excited to get Matthew and Tori back on, because not only have they co-hosted the podcast many times as well since, but they're such lovely people and wonderful filmmakers. And they have a book which is coming out in the US in July and the UK in August. Obviously, we'll be plugging it then, and I'm sure you'll be back on to talk about it then. But give us a title.
Full to the Brim with Fizz, Ginger and Fierce Determination, colon, Ooh. A Modern Guide to Independent Filmmaking. We sort of did it as a working title. Man, they're going to change that. Oh, no. No, they haven't.
No, fine. Just start with it.
Keep it simple.
Keep it simple.
But also, Full to the Brim, what is that about?
Oh, yeah, don't totally. Know. Don't know. What is that about? Yeah, no, but what is it about? What is your book about?
It's not really a how-to of no. filmmaking at all. It's sort of more like, this is what we did for the last 12 years or so, and so sometimes it went right, sometimes it went wrong, but this is sort of what we learned. So it's sort of a journey over the last decade or so from short films. So it does take you through, obviously, you know, the writing side of things, and then finance and making and pre-production, making a post-production into festivals and distribution. So it's kind of all of the bits. It's sort of a little, you know, yeah. As much as we know, we aren't experts. It's just, this is what we've done and this is what we've learned. So maybe don't try these things, but maybe try these things.
I love it. I can't wait for it to come out. But look, you two are a real inspiration in the filmmaking world, and it's great you're in our world as well, the Filmmakers Podcast bubble. And I think it's really inspiring for our listeners to see and hear what you did. I mean, they might not be able to see it yet. Well, no, they can see it because it's out now. Infinitum, Subject Unknown, is out now. What platforms?
So, as of yesterday, so it's in the UK, Ireland, Australia, and New Zealand. And then, so in the UK, it's on Apple, so iTunes, Amazon, Virgin, Sky, Rakuten. That's
Chili.
How you say it. Chili. And that thing. That's
anywhere
it.
That you can buy your film.
It's true. But Infinitum, Subject Unknown, is out now. You can go watch it. Do go support, because Matthew and Tori made this movie by themselves, just the two of them in lockdown. I watched it. I loved it. I think it's a fantastic movie. So good. So impressive, actually, Matt, considering you haven't usually worked a camera. It's not your role. You don't, you know, do that. To suddenly learn, both of you, how to, you know, work it. And we'll talk about how you made it in a bit. But I wanted to just jump back slightly as to why. Because obviously you've made two amazing films with Two Down and The Isle, which have done both massively successful in my eyes, because they're both brilliant movies and deserved it. And maybe we can touch on the sort of the cinema runs you did on those as well. And then thinking, hang on, how are we going to get another movie off the ground? It's always that difficult next stage, because you want to go up a budget and you always want to do a bigger names in it and all that kind of stuff. And then you're in lockdown and you thought, what should we do? Should we make a movie? Is that what happened? How did Infinitum, Subject Unknown come about?
We had two projects that looked like they were going to go sort of this time
last
year.
One of ours
year.
And one that's with someone else's.
And then lockdown happened and it all kicked off, and we were a bit like, right, very unlikely that that's going to happen now.
And also because both of the films needed sort of lots of people,
yeah,
big crowd sort of things, and actually both of them had sort of club sort of things going on, and there's no way that you could do it without having that. You know, one's a drag queen heist sort of thing, like it's big, you know, there's like dance numbers and things like that. Like, okay, how, we just can't, we're not going to be able to do that,
no,
with the current situation, and maybe not for a while anyway. And then it was a couple of days into the lockdown that I suppose we were thinking, no, we can work on scripts, that's great. And then neither of us are very good at not doing things.
Actually, I'll cut in here.
Oh, go on.
I was more than happy to do absolutely bugger all for the whole of it.
That is not true. It's like on holiday, you always say this, and then you go, oh, I've settled down with my book on the beach, and about an hour later, we could go up there and look at that.
Go and explore. Let's go on an adventure.
Yeah. And then I sort of, because for a while I've really wanted to sort of work with an iPhone, you know, before we've used Arri's and lovely things like that, but just wanted to know how far you can push an iPhone. And thought, oh, well, this is sort of a great opportunity to do that. We've got a little gimbal, you know, let's stick on that, see what happens. So I started going, thinking about this. I can't remember the order of things, but then I think we saw a tweet from Edgar Wright who said, I hope there's some indie filmmakers out there who are making use of the empty streets of London. I hope they're out there just filming stuff. We're like, yes, that's a good point.
Well, I think we'd started writing by that point, before you saw that tweet.
I can't remember
because
if that was...
Because you were like, we might as well try and do something. And then you went off on this tangent of...
I was thinking like a post-apocalyptic one woman's journey... to go and find like her family or something like that, which is, well, I suppose in a way it sort of is.
Yeah.
But
then I sort of thought about the work that we had already done. And we have a script called Infinitum, which we started right about 8 years ago. And it's sort of huge, big budget sci-fi stuff. You see the parallel worlds.
It's about the experiment.
Yeah.
It's
how the experiment started, and the characters that you see in this film that Ian and Conleth play, they're sort of much bigger roles in the original screenplay. Then our manager sort of said to us, can you by any chance kind of turn it into a TV series? So we went away and did all of that work of, you know, expanding the world and turning that into the pilot and da da da. And then we sort of got that into a pretty good place. Because from your idea of having one sole character kind of trying to find their way, I sort of thought, well, actually, why don't we use one of the people in the experiment? So we just take one person who happens to be sort of lost or trapped in between worlds. And she's desperately trying to find her way out.
And I think maybe that's when we saw the tweet about, you know, like, yeah, go and film the empty world. Okay, so she's basically in this parallel world. Because in the experiment, there are infinite amount of parallel worlds. So in this one, there just happens to be no one else. And she wakes up in this strange attic where there's no one else around apart from these sort of ominous zeppelins and people watching, that sort of thing. So we went, okay, well, we'll use Edgar Wright's idea. Thanks, Edgar. And we just, yeah, sort of used that to help structure the story, I suppose, like the journey, yeah, of what was going to happen with it.
It actually, the initial sort of idea came from the short film that we wrote.
Yes, which was like 2012, I think. Yeah, and then just a woman wakes up in the back of a van, and she's basically in a time loop, and then you get a little message saying, if you can survive the next 12 hours, you can go. But she doesn't realise she's in a time loop, and then, yeah, so she ever gets shot or killed, poof, she gets reset. That never actually happened, and then that was the idea for Infinitum. Okay, so who's making this experiment? How does this sort of work? There's a kind of big governmental experiment that starts off as a small sort of science project, and then of course governments step in and try and use it as ways to develop human evolution, basically. So, you know, the military get in there and they're finding subjects in different worlds to sort of put in these little time loops, to sort of push them forwards to see how, you know, the idea is people do extraordinary things in extraordinary situations. So if you keep pushing people really, really far, it's all very quantum physics-y as well. So the idea is that anything that can happen will and does happen. So every time you decide, it's like, you know, sliding doors, you know, you decide to go left, there's a version of you which has gone right. So it just creates another universe, every choice you make. So, but the idea is that if you know this and you can sort of see that, then you can, yeah, you can key into that. You can sort of alter reality, basically.
Well, you can choose one possibility. And so therefore you can kind of dictate reality. And so the subjects become almost superhero-y because they can change reality.
That's what the government, they're sort of trying to get to, basically.
Great. And it's, and honestly, it's wonderful. And I, what I like about that as well is it came from a short film idea that you had years ago. And I think as filmmakers, it's so important to write all these ideas down wherever it is and have them. And then, like you say, that time comes where you go, oh, we're in lockdown, we're in COVID times. Ooh, there's two of us, we're filmmakers, let's go do something. You can look through that list and go, that's a good idea. Why don't we just do that? And then I imagine that's how you both ran with it and went, we could do this, we could do this.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were just like, actually, we can stick her in an attic rather than in the back of a truck. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and she gets these clues from another world that lead her on this journey to, well, a journey of discovery, really.
Yeah, find out why she's there, who she is, and how she gets out of it, basically.
Which is great. So everyone knows, Matthew directed and shot the film. Tori stars in it. You both produced it, obviously, because it's just you two, so you're bound to be producing it. Tori stars in it, and it was entirely written and shot during COVID 2020.
Yeah, so with the first sort of 4 weeks of the lockdown, we were writing it.
Hang on, the first 4 weeks, the first lockdown, you already started writing it.
Well, so from day two of the being lockdown, we went, right, let's do something. And then we had the idea and went, right, so let's start writing. And, you know, normally we'd obviously want to spend a lot longer on the script.
But in 4 weeks.
But because we had no idea, like, you know, how long the lockdowns were going to happen. I mean, if we're going to do this in an empty world, we have to start shooting it. So we gave ourselves until like the last week of April, I think. Roughly to go, right, whatever happens, whatever state the script is in, we have to start shooting then. Because, you know, they would do those little announcements, okay, three mm-hmm. more weeks.
Yeah.
Okay,
and right. At that point, actually, we all thought it was going to be done and dusted within a month at the most, right? So you were up against a time limit.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then they go, okay, so summer, I went, okay, so we've got to get this done by beginning of June, basically, is what I think we set.
Yeah.
And we do. I think that 1st of June was our last sort of shooting day. So then we had sort of 4.5 weeks of filming, basically. So we had 2 weeks in London, and then the second half of it, because the journey is that she's trying to get to this research center, and we knew where we wanted to shoot that, and we could have access to this huge Jacobean mansion, which was empty, because Tori's mum is an arts historian, art history lecturer at this American college, which we knew was empty. But we didn't know at that point if we were allowed to do it. We weren't allowed to go there, so we had to wait for the government to go,
if you can do your job, go and
safely.
Do your job.
Yeah, the British film industry can start up if you can do it safely.
Yeah.
So, and we were like, well, it's just two of us in an empty house. We can definitely do that safely. So there was about a couple of days.
More than that, before we then went down to the country.
Yeah, after they announced they went, oh, well, hang on, we can go. We need to pack everything up.
And just do it, which is lovely because you're talking about using places you know. And using equipment and offices or locations, basically what I mean, that you know. And the fact is you guys went, okay, well, we can probably shoot in our house, right? I mean, that's where the attic is. Is it somewhere in amongst your house?
So the flat below us, which is
belongs
to these sort of older couples. So they were sort of trapped down in Eastbourne. So a lot of it's down in their house, but then you sort of go back and then back up again into their weird asbestos filled, as we discover later, attic. Gosh.
But perfect. You were like, well, hang on, there's an empty flat plus with the loft bit next door where it looks down. We can shoot that there. Plus we have this mansion type location up in Oxford that as soon as we've got the time to, we're allowed to go shoot there, we can shoot there. So you planned it to do that. That's great. That's so clever. And that's so important.
Oh yeah. We've sort of always done that realistically. We've always, because, you know, we both trained as actors, and I obviously don't do that anymore, but, you know, we didn't know another way of doing things. So we've always gone, here's the idea. What can we get? Okay, now let's adapt it to the situation, either the budget or the, okay, we can only get this much money. Right, let's rewrite things or the location. Okay, so we'll base it on those. So all the places in the film, like, you know, the canal path and the cool graffiti bridges and things, it's all places that we've sort of known from our walking the dog, basically. You know, they're all in walking distance. So we'd walk the dog and go, okay, well, this is a cool place. We can shoot that. Okay, so maybe she goes along here. Right, let's write that into the script. That sort of thing.
Yeah. I love that. And it's so important for indie filmmakers out there when you're sort of setting out to think about that, because it's all good and well to go, we're going to do this sci-fi and we need, suddenly your budgets go through the roof. But if you go, well, hang on, let's just, whatever it is, it might not be a sci-fi drama, but this location works, I can probably get that one off a friend, or hang on, we can shoot in my basement, or we can shoot, suddenly it opens up so many possibilities and you're writing the script around that, which is exactly what you guys did, right?
It's rather than trying to squeeze an idea, like have this huge idea and then squeeze it into places, we've always adapted as we've been writing, not we haven't written it and then adapted afterwards. We found places, I mean, even with Two Down years ago, we would go, okay, so that would be cool. Oh, we can hang on, maybe we can do that.
Well, we know that block of flats, we can shoot behind there.
Yeah, so okay, yeah. So what would make sense to that? Okay, we can use that here. So yeah, we'd sort of write with all the locations always in mind. So we just carried that on.
And the same with the Isle as well, to touch on that a little bit. Obviously, you had that Isle in Scotland that you could use, right? Or have access to.
Yeah, we found the island first and that sort of inspired us to write the story. Yeah. So yeah, completely the way around.
So important, so important. So why don't, I know we sort of touched around what the Infinitum Subject Unknown is, but if you could give the log line and then I can play the trailer.
Okay, so Infinitum Subject Unknown is a mind-bending British sci-fi. So in the world of Infinitum, the paraverse or the multiverse is very much a reality that's being discovered, but it's being used as a place for experimentation, especially to further human evolution using unsuspecting subjects. This is where we find Jane, waking up in a strange attic with no clue how she got there or why. We follow her journey as she slowly pieces together a puzzle of what is happening and how she can hopefully stop it. But she has the added obstacle of being trapped in a time loop in an entirely empty world where every possibility can become a reality.
In the world of quantum science, anything that can happen will happen.
The exploration into the capability of the human mind is not a new one.
Hello?
It is only now, however, that we are able to see behind the curtain.
Every choice you make creates infinite possibilities.
Infinite possibilities.
I'm trying to get to this research center. I don't know why, but I think it might help.
We are on the cusp of propelling human evolution to a staggering new dimension.
What the hell have you done, Professor?
There you go. It's really difficult, I think, to create this kind of, because it's so important, because this is the stuff people read when they go to Apple or Rakuten or Virgin or wherever. This is the, you know, they see the thumbnail and they go, ooh, I like that, because your poster is ace. They see your McKellen's on it, they go, ooh, I like that. And they go, oh, I think I want to watch this movie. But then they might read it because someone else sat next to them might go, oh, I don't know if I want a sci-fi tonight or whatever. And that little log line or whatever is so important.
Oh, I know.
Hang on, actually, I'm trying to find. So look,
Apple have nailed it. They've got a really good.
Oh, have they?
So yeah, so they said a mind-bending slice of British science fiction featuring Sir Ian McKellen and Connaught Hill. Jane, Tory Butler Hearth, is trapped in a parallel universe and is forced to find a way to alter her reality before it's too late.
Boom. That's very good.
Well done, the writers of Apple.
Yeah. I think that was Bluefinch, to be fair.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
That was well a done, did they not consult you on it? Because probably they shouldn't have, because if they had, it would have been this long old window.
Yeah.
I don't know what to write, kids.
What we've learned, because, we have learned definitely to leave certain things to people who are really good at certain things.
Yes, marketing teams are good at marketing movies. They know how to do it. They know how to sell them. And sometimes we can get involved a bit too much, right, with that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you're right. Actually, there's a masterclass that I really want to listen to.
Oh, on the Masterclass app?
On the Masterclass. Are we allowed to plug that?
Sure. I mean,
they might give you some free stuff.
Yeah, well, there is the 2-for-1 at the moment, isn't there? We could go halves on it.
Yeah.
Have you got it?
Because we might do that. No, we haven't got it. I did have it. And then
we had it at the beginning. And then
lapsed.
But there's this new one that's lapsed
in my subscription. Yeah.
There's this new one that's come out with Daniel Pink. And it's all about pitching.
Ah.
And I'm like, we need
that's something we really need to get better at.
That's cool. Well, we've done a really good episode on pitching with John Livesey and Aaron Scotti, episode 192. And he talks all about pitching. He's a pitch master. So that might be one to listen to. But yes, so it's really important that we have a grasp on how we can sell our films, especially when we're doing podcasts like this, or we're doing talks, or we're doing interviews. But sometimes we leave it to the experts, because some people are very good at it and we have to listen to what they have to say, even if we're not happy.
But you're entirely right. And we know that's like a massive, it's a massive thing in our sort of our toolkit that we just really need to work on.
Yeah. But again, it's not, we're so creative, and we can get bogged down in our own sort of bubble sometimes. And actually, this is their job. People's jobs are to sell films. And if you've got a big distributor behind you, you're not self-distributing the movie, then you let, you know, what are they going to come up with? Because like the poster's really cool, but I imagine that if you'd had sort of gone, oh, and we want to do the poster, you might have done something different with it, right?
Well, we did originally, so we always get like a little
I thought you were going to say, no, we did that.
No, we definitely did not do that. No, but we always do like a sort of like a little teaser one. So when I'm sending things out to distributors and people, so that I'm quite good at writing things. It's when I'm talking about stuff, I just can't be concise. So I'll write like a really, really good email. Boof, here's some visuals. And they go, okay, so punchy, like just really, really short, 5 or 6 lines. Here's a nice cool image. Boof. And that gets the ball rolling, and then they can do the clever stuff. But when I'm chatting in real life, I'll just ramble on like an absolute maniac.
Yeah. Well, distribution on the marketing and distribution is so important. It really is. And maybe while we're talking about that side of things now, let's jump into that, and then we'll come back to the making of, because distribution for this is great. Like say Bluefinch are behind it, you know, you've got all the platforms available, you know, it's on Sky, it's on Amazon, it's, you know, it's everywhere, which is fantastic. That's what you want for a movie that was shot in lockdown, released in lockdown. Everyone could go watch it now. And that's amazing. How did that happen? How did you approach Bluefinch? Like you said, you sent an email, you just told me, with your description and poster. And I imagine you did that to quite a few. And why Bluefinch? What was their take on it?
To be honest, though, we didn't at first, because we started, we did this, and to be perfectly honest, we didn't think anyone would ever really see it. That wasn't the point.
Really?
Because it was our editor, Will. It was only after a few days, because even he was like, okay, fine. Those guys are, you know, we've known Will for almost 20 years now. I've known him. So he's like, okay, you know, he wasn't working either. I'll edit their film, because I'll play along. We were sending him footage every day because it was just the two of us. So he had to kind of check it was all working.
Right.
Did it make sense from a story point of view? Was it visually working? Was it even, you know, was it in focus? Not always. You know, all that sort of stuff. Because you're working on quite a small screen, so sometimes you need, you know,
it's really hard to see. Yeah. Really hard.
But it was started off partly because of a way of
keeping sane,
to be perfectly honest. You know, we're not very good at not doing things, as we said. So okay, let's do this. And him and his brother, Ben, who did the VFX, went, we'll just humour them. Great. And then after a few days, he's like, guys, this is actually
this could
good.
Work.
This could actually work as a film. And he was getting excited. And that's
right.
And then we started just posting things on Twitter and stuff, going, hey, guys, we'll try this. We'll see what happens. But we didn't, you know, so I wasn't approaching distribution people. And then Screen International kind of got hold of it, went, what on earth are Fizz and Ginger doing? Okay, can we have a chat about you just working through this stuff? Again, we're like, why not? Great, that's really lovely of them. And then your
friend
mate,
of mine,
yeah, from
who
yoga.
I did, yeah, from yoga, who works for the BBC, Ian Rose, he sort of approached me and sent me a message and said, I'm thinking of doing an article on people who are doing stuff during lockdown. Can I talk to you guys about your film? And so we were like, yeah, with BBC, yeah.
Oh,
sure.
Yes, it's BBC.
And it was great. And they used a photograph of the James Bond as the thing. Obviously, they're like later down in the article, they were talking about James Bond, but it said like, we made a film in lockdown, and the picture was Daniel Craig, James Bond. And I was like, guys, I just want to point out, we definitely didn't do that.
It went all over the place. I mean, it was, you know, Australia, America, all sorts
of people started getting in touch with us, to be perfectly honest, which has never happened before. We've always had to do the hard work, you know, of like approaching people. So we still had to do that. But then, so Bluefinch, who, you know, because we're old now, we, you know, we've been around. So, you know, we used to bump into Mike, he used to be at Kaleidoscope in Cannes. You know, we would literally just bump into him into the road, or, you know, the road, safety first, guys. You know, have a little quick coffee. And then he's like, I'd love to see this. You know, we love our sci-fi. I reckon we can tell it. We're like, oh, okay, stuff's getting a bit more serious now. And then more people started joining the conversation. So, of course, we were like, we should probably tout this around a little bit. So that's when, so I got my little email and the poster and a few photographs. Uber simple, to be honest. And we just sort of started sending it out to people. And then we ended up going, actually, we really like Mike and the guys at Bluefinch. So that's who we went for the UK and Ireland, Australia and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And was that before you had Ian and Conleth on board?
So all the press was, actually. Yeah. And then it was actually kind of near the end of the filming, halfway through the filming. So Conleth's part, so Ian's part didn't exist in this one. He did in the big one. And then, but Conleth's part was originally going to be
played by my dad.
That'll be fun. And then we were like, well, hang on a minute. Like, as people were getting more interested as we were filming, and Will was going, this is decent, guys. We went, well, you know, we've worked with Conleth before, we've known him for a long time. Conleth, do you want to do this part?
And as wonderful as my dad is.
Yes.
He's not Conleth. He's certainly not Ian McKellen.
No. And then, so we've got Conleth to do one little bit. And then as we were putting it together, we realised, because, you know, we always like our subtle filmmaking, but then we realised this had gone uber subtle, and people were going to go, what the is going on, because there's not a lot of dialogue hugely. So we did want to explain a bit more about the science. So then we went, okay, we need to give Conleth more stuff to do. So he's got another scene, then more voiceover bits. And then we were putting it together more. And then we went, well, we kind of need to explain a few more little bits about it. Well, let's go back to the original idea of having these scientists as, you know, witness scientists. And maybe they're doing like a documentary. Because we didn't want to do like stuff on screen, as in like Tori's talking to someone on screen. We wanted her to be fully alone in this world. So there's the, throughout it, there's these little snippets of this documentary, sort of like an in-house, the Scientology do their own like in-house
promo.
Sort of,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then we went, oh, well, hang on. We've also worked with Ian McKellen. I know it sounds really easy. It's not, but as in like we did just email and go, hi, we're doing this. Are you possibly around at all? Conleth Hill's doing it. We know you are, Ian,
because it's lockdown and
you're not doing anything else, darling.
And yeah, and but also, you know, we have asked him to do things before. Like, he doesn't just say yes.
Oh, God, no.
So luckily, he just found it really interesting. He's also likes Conleth Hill as well. So we went, oh, Conleth Hill's doing it.
Okay.
So, be a little day of it. So yeah, so then we got Ian involved. But it was a storytelling thing, to be honest. We thought, oh, that's quite fun. You know, they're very much cameos in this as well. And luckily we've never tried to say starring Ian McKellen, even though the poster might slightly
say that. Yes.
Yes.
It's just a little
There's not bit, a yeah. with Ian McKellen. It's
There is. It,
it is.
Is.
It's, oh, it's with the and
Ian
and
McKellen. Oh, yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
Oh, fine.
But we do try and point that out to people that, and luckily most of the press have said, you know, they're cameos, yes. Which is good. Because we are going to get a little bit of backlash, I think. So I do apologise. But yeah, so very much cameo. But it was just a storytelling thing. And then when people went, well, hang on, Ian McKellen's involved in this. Well, this is like a big thing. And we're like, ooh. So it just kind of snowballed, to be perfectly honest with you. It was not our intention. And we went, we've known Ian. He's a friend. He's been massively supportive of us.
He has.
I've known him for about 20 years.
Well, he was in the first ever short you made as a team as Fizz and Ginger, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So
that you were in.
That I was in as well. Yes, indeed.
We should dig that up one day. Will edited
that, like I say, and he's been involved with you guys for ages. So basically, you made this one by sort of asking for favors from people you've worked with in the past and said, well, look, let's do this for pretty much your money, you know, just literally nothing.
Yeah. We made sure we paid people to do the post-production.
Yeah.
That's the only money that was so involved.
We paid Will enough, and Ben and our composer, Tom.
And Pete, who graded it.
Yeah. Well, that's lovely. That's really nice. But I imagine that was just out of your pocket sort of thing, really. I mean...
We had a lovely...
So the guy who helped invest in the aisle. I mean, we're not talking big money at all. It's really small amounts of money. It's like, you know, for what they
micro
did. It's miniature. Yeah, so he said...
Lovely Anthony...
Because it was actually really well timed, because about a week before he started getting money from the aisle. I'm like, oh... Well, I wasn't expecting any money. Great.
That's great timing.
On that note, Anthony, we've got...
Could you put it straight
back
in?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
That's when you hit your investors, when they start getting some return.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh...
They didn't get all of it. It's just like little bits. It's like, oh, well, that's more than I expected. Oh, brilliant. Okay. Well, if that's the way
you feel.
But we are talking tiny money. This is not.
Of course you are. Yeah. This isn't big. This is just like help us get through this and help us make this, which is so lovely. And the fact that you've got that relationship with an investor that's invested in your last film anyway to go, look, we're doing this. And this is a film that is much more likely to make some money because of what it is, because you made it for, you know, micro budget, and because it does have Ian McKellen. Suddenly it goes, oh, well, you can sell it in territories and they're your investor.
Already it's sold in more countries than any of our other films.
And actually, interestingly, because there's very little dialogue, it also opens it up to far more territories.
So like quite a lot of Asian countries are looking at it.
Yeah.
So,
because I'm on my own, so like there's such little dialogue in it that actually
you're Mr. Beaning it basically, aren't you?
Yeah, you're Mr. Bean. Mrs. Yeah, Beaning
Mr.
it.
Bean. It's Mrs.
Bean of the sci-fi world.
This is amazing. I love it. And what's so inspiring about this is you just went, let's do this. And the fact is that now it's getting, and really loved your release. It's selling more territories than your films before. And this was just something you went, let's just shoot this. So let's jump back to that. Let's just shoot this. Because shooting on an iPhone is not easy. Talk us through Tori when Matthew said, oh, don't worry, I'll shoot this. And how did you both learn to do this? And what was going through your head at this point?
To be honest, it was, you know what? Like, you
didn't
even
discuss this. This could be quite interesting.
This is crazy.
What did you think, wife?
What did you think, wife?
I didn't think it would look very good, if I'm honest.
Neither did I to think, be fair, so yeah.
And the kit that we had a gimbal. And we used the Filmic Pro app.
That, to be fair, was a game changer. Not a game changer, but like, as in that. I know that's very technical. So we obviously had to learn this and a lot of YouTube videos and things like that. Even to use the gimbal and the special ninja walk to make it smooth and that sort of stuff. I didn't know any of this stuff.
Really hard. Yeah.
And you did a lot of work on just working out the technicalities
of
shooting
as well.
I mean, the whole light balance thing was just, I mean,
lighting was a thing we've never had to at all ever think about properly, you know, from a creative point of view.
Yeah, you've always had brilliant DPs with you. So it's wonderful as for directors, we can go, well, I want it to look like that. And you send them amazing photos and pictures and stills from other movies. And they kind of go, okay, I'll do my best with whatever equipment they've got.
And I've always known it's really hard, but I fully appreciate how hard that actually is. You know, they kind of like, okay, I'll do it with a couple of lights. I'm like, okay, that's really simple. We had a couple of lights and like literally, I genuinely started grey hairs coming out by the end of it just because, trying to shoot at nighttime, kind of going, okay, we need to make it realistic. So like, okay, the light's coming from the moon. And then you watch stuff and you're like, hang on, that's not what they do at all, because you need to be able to bloody see them in the first place. So
it was actually, and there was definitely moments where, you know, from me as an actor's point of view, I was like, okay, good, yep, ready to go. And then you were still fiddling with the gimbal, being
that's
like, why is it not switching on?
I'm ready.
It's still drooping.
I'm ready.
And it's like,
there's a little limp.
And his limp iPhone's just hanging sort of off, like hanging off this
turning
gimbal.
Itself off. The gimbal.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is wrong with that thing?
Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of five-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Shop Tommy John's Friends and Family Sale right now and get 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Myrtle Beach. You know what's better than getting away to a beach? Getting together at the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. They've got over 2,000 restaurants, live music playing all day and night, and endless attractions. This place was made for playing hard and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 Miles Where You Belong. The beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
And that's what we learned as well, because the iPhones, to be fair, I would genuinely happy shoot another film on an iPhone now, especially now I know more about it. But like, it's not great with bright light, so we had to get like a little, what we call sunglasses, but like, because we didn't know the real name, little ND filter. So like,
sunglasses.
So even when we were inside, like the light was sort of blowing out, and I realised that's when I especially when people knew we were doing this, people started sending us like, oh, I made a film on an iPhone and things like that. Like, it's great, but like it still doesn't look great. To be, not in a bad way, but as in like, you know, just because of technical limitations. And then, so we had to kind of work hard from that side of things. But you know, the ND filter is a massive help, to be honest.
There's no way we could have done it without the ND filter.
No, not to make it look like how it does.
But when we put the ND filter on, you then have these like weird kind of...
We call them ghosts.
Ghosts.
There's like kind of...
Like a reflection.
Yeah, weird light things, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Like, so then we had to kind of like, we'd put like bits of cardboard
to angle the ND filter,
and
so
of course
it wouldn't
reflect. Put weight on the other side of the gimbal, so that's stressing it out. So then you have to kind of counterbalance it with like
croc clips
and dog poo bags. And like, you can't
wait.
That was just as a padding.
That was a padding. Well, no.
Right, this.
No, not full. Not full, Giles. Yeah, so like there's pictures of like what we actually had to deal with. It was just ridiculous. Oh, yeah, because obviously then we used tiny little Rode microphones. Because, you know, sound is as important as the visuals. So Tori had the tiny little receiver and then a lapel mic. That was probably our biggest expense. It's about £280 for these mics and the lapel thing. That's as much as we... Oh, and the lights were about £200 as well.
But then the other bit had to be attached to the gimbal.
Yes. Well, it goes straight into the iPhone. So then that's even more weight, but on...
No, but then we taped it to the bit that you hold of the gimbal. But then that meant that you had very little to hold on to. Honestly,
when you say it out loud, like, why not did we do this? There you go.
Is the phrase Heath Robinson?
That's the thing your mum always says, but I never really know what it is.
Does anyone
something to do
know
with Robinson Crusoe, isn't it? Throw things together? I don't
know. When it's like real hickledy, ramshackled, kind of botch it and make it work. That's basically how we shot it.
That's our style.
Which is great. But how great's that though? The fact that even though everyone can image, you know, visualize this now of this, you know, iPhone strapped up with a gimbal that keeps falling, and you've got dog poo bags on one side, cardboard on the other, as sort of a barn door with tape all wrapped around the image of it. But yet you still made a feature film with it. You still went, let's persevere, because that first few days must have been really infuriating when you'd sort of spent 4 weeks on the script going, we're doing this, learning about it, and then going, this thing doesn't really work how we want it to. That must have been really testing for you guys to think, shall we even continue this?
And the other thing we discovered was because my phone only was a 64
gigabytes,
right? Yes,
it meant that you'd shoot for 20 minutes and then you'd be like, ooh.
Yeah, because we were shooting 4K because we knew that, you know, if it was going to go anywhere, we had to have as much information as we could out of the thing to kind of go and be able to play with things afterwards. And, you know, like a lot of the platforms these days need at least 4K, for example, as you know, so we're like, yeah. Which is amazing, the fact that a phone can do that. I'm still, you know, shocked that a tiny little thing can do this, which does make a difference. But then we used it, so the Filmic Pro app as well, if you pay for the extra bit, the cinematic bit, you can kind of go into to log. So we did that. So really flattened it all down, so then we could really play with the image afterwards as well. So I think that's why. So that's what Steven Soderbergh, when he did Unsane, didn't do. So apparently he got some of his settings on Filmic Pro app a little bit wrong. He's learned.
Oh, right. Well, hopefully, yeah.
But like, so to be able to do that, so I think that, so the Filmic Pro app's like £15 something. And then, but for another £15, you get the cinematography bit, so you can really control things a lot more. So, but considering it's like, it's £30.
But top tip, use an iPhone with a larger memory.
Oh, yeah, sorry, memory. 16, yeah.
64. Because that was irritating, wasn't it? Constantly having to kind of stop and offload.
Well, especially when you're out and about, right? You're out on the street, you know, you're out in your lovely locations that you had, and suddenly you're going, oh my God, we're running out of battery for one thing, but also running out of space. So you mean you've got to take your laptop with you, you've got to plug it in, charge it, download everything, and each take is, well, I suppose it's like shooting on film then, in a way. You go, each take is valuable here, we're going to lose, you know, not only light, but time, energy.
But then we were also at home. Sort of on the flip side, it was sort of like, oh, we'll just stop, have a cup of tea. And
yeah, it sort of worked out because it meant that we could set. So we'd probably get through maybe a scene, you know, the shortest scene. And then we'd send it off to Will, to the editor, Will, to have a look. So then whilst we were doing the next one, which is probably in the same location, he could look at it and go, yeah, this shot didn't quite work. Actually, this is a bit blown out. So we go, okay, fine, we'll just reshoot that little bit. Or because also in the film, there's... it doesn't matter if we spoil it or not, I suppose. As in, so Tori wakes, she kind of gets reset various times, but then we played around with things. So it means that there's various different sort of versions of Tori or timelines of Tori scooting around the place. So we also have to try and match the light from her journey for each one of those things. Yeah. So some of them will be slightly darker, some will be slightly brighter. So we have to sort of think about all that as well, which is really subtle and no one would ever really notice it, to be perfectly
honest. I didn't notice at all that. That's fantastic. Even think about that now. Of course you did, because Tori's now... The character Jane, yeah, isn't it? Is now in another part, of course, moving around. So therefore, if you're shooting that,
and there's
right,
bits where
totally.
She's cut her hand, yeah, and the things like, so she's cut the hand, but then
it's continuity, yeah.
But then she doesn't cut her hand until later. So you go, oh, hang on. So the one we've been watching isn't actually that version of herself. Okay, so trying to think of that and including the light and all that sort of stuff was a bit of a mind boggle.
Yeah. This is amazing. This is like film school for you guys as well, learning on the job, but also you're making a film that's being released, so it's not like you're just making a little short in your room going, okay, well, we'll put that on YouTube or whatever, or not put it out. This is you going, oh, we're filmmakers here. And I think that is sometimes the worry with people who have made films before, to just go and shoot something on an iPhone, because you think, yeah, but the standard, or that you worry about being judged or anything. But honestly, you should be so proud of this movie, because it really is fantastic. It really is, you know, you've really worked so hard and you can see it, but in a brilliant way. It works. It really is a delight.
Thanks, Charles.
It is. The performance as well, Tori, is fantastic. All your performances
are really great.
It's great. How did you? Because obviously you've got stunts in there as well, and you've, you know, within that. So did you just, was it like your editor Will, was wonderful Will, was he saying, okay, well, if you do, you knew to do it like this, and you can bring the car in here, and you can, was it all that kind of,
yeah,
how did you make,
yeah,
things
lots
like that
of split
one?
Screens.
A lot of split screen stuff, yeah, and we did also use blue screen as well.
Ah,
which we've never
okay.
done before.
Yeah.
Which is, again, so, changes the light on your, you've got,
yes,
to work that into,
yeah,
your
that was, exactly, which we've never done before, and again, so yeah, we had to do tests, and we'd send things, and they go, great, yeah, but rubbish. So maybe the light needs to be here. So they'd send us the thing back and go, the light needs to be here, that needs to be here. And like, okay, that,
yeah,
makes sense.
That whole,
right,
scene at the window where we had to pop the blue screen and then replicate the light coming from the window on my face, that was difficult.
Yeah. Oh, well, I can imagine. Let's talk about this whole thing as being difficult, because it's just the two of you. When people go and make an iPhone movie, if you like, you've often got more people to help. You've got technical advisors. You've got, you know, other crew members. But it's just you two. So, and again, Tori, you're in it pretty much every shot. That's you two shot, right? Because Ian shot his stuff himself and Connor shot his stuff himself with, obviously, you were guiding them the whole time. So everything that you were doing, you shot. It's, like I said, it's still mind-blowing. It's just the two of you. You know, when me and Dan have done stuff, a Food for Thought documentary, and we shot on a gimbal on the iPhone, and I understand those problems, it keeps falling. And it's a documentary. We can sort of get away with it, you know? It's a doc. It's a bit easier to go, okay, well, the light's not great, or the wobbles, or, yeah, all right, fine. Here you're going, no, it has to be smooth. You've got these beautiful gimbal shots. You've got these, you know, wonderful things in here. Drone as well. It's great. But again, it's just the two of you. Can you help our audience talk through the difficulties here and the mindset you must have been in to keep going and keep pushing through on this?
The great thing, to be fair, is because it was just two of us, and yes, we did have the time pressure, we don't know when things are going to unlock, but also we didn't really have to rush.
You don't have 40 crew,
yeah, so,
waiting on you.
I don't know about you, but like, I always feel if there's like 40 people behind you, and of course you've got breaks coming up, you want to make your day, all that sort of,
yeah,
stuff. You don't want to go over your time. You hate going over time, not because of pay, just because we don't want to work people to the bone. I just want to point out, very happy to pay them. We didn't have that. So
no.
If something took longer, then we went, okay, we'll get tired. Let's go have a cup of tea and we'll just come back.
Yeah.
Have a Jaffa cake. Great. Let's keep doing it. So there were a few times like that. And so we didn't have that pressure.
It was a first AD's nightmare. If we would have had a first AD on there, they would have lost their shit.
Yeah, because there's definitely days, or there's even scenes that we carried on the next day.
Yeah.
Which, you know, which I know is what people do, but as in... In this sort of situation, you know, it's sort of a pain in the bum, I suppose.
But I mean, and we had our own jobs. So, like, I did all the production design, of that. But, you know, I'd always look at the shot and to kind of see what was in frame.
Mm.
And then, obviously, costume, makeup, all of that. And the continuity was the main one for me because, like, as we've already talked about, because there are so many timelines... and trying to kind of keep a track of that continuity was just a little bit of a brain fart. But, and then you were just like, yeah, you were all on the camera. And
yeah, I mean, so it got really frustrating, especially as later, as, you know, things got later and later, like those bloody stair shots and things, which is really small, but it was like trying to light stuff. But because we didn't have people waiting around, it sort of took the pressure off a little bit.
Yeah,
like it's almost easier. So I really want to work with the phone again, but like maybe have a really small crew, like 5 or 6 people, but do this kind of thing again, I suppose. Yeah. But yeah, I suppose also because, I mean, actually, when we first started, we didn't have any money at all, to be fair. So there wasn't any pressure from that sort of thing. I think it's the lack of like, not responsibility, but as in, you know, we didn't think anyone's going to watch it.
Yeah.
Realistically. And we didn't think, you know, and it didn't really matter in a way. It was sort of this, for us, it was learning. So if something was frustrating, I mean, you know, filmmaking is mostly sort of puzzle solving anyway. So, and I want to learn more about lighting. I want to learn more about camera movement. Why does this move? What's motivating this? How can I help the scene? How can I help Tori, you know, or you know, the characters performance in the emotional state? How can I do these things? That's sort of what was driving me, rather than we need to make a really good film. It's how can I learn? What can I learn to really make this scene better, basically? So this was the first time I didn't do any storyboards, which I've never done before. So it was just a shot list of that. This is what we need to do to make the scene work. Mm. But then I allowed myself time to just play with things, which I've never done before.
And some of the shots that I personally think are the best shots in it are the ones that you went, oh, I wonder what happens if I just stand on a stool and like swing my arm around and track while you're walking, and you're just like, oh my god, we would have had a massive setup of like, you know, a dolly and track or a
nice big jib arm. Yeah, totally.
But then also the crew behind that stuff. And then you're like, ah, it's a bit pants. Okay, well, that's just 10 people have just wasted 2 hours of their time and things. You know, we didn't...
You wasted 30 seconds, if it didn't work.
Yeah, I'm like, fine.
Perfect.
We've got so much stuff that is not in the film. Not really scenes, but, like, things that we tried. And, you know, just couldn't all be in it. But, like, you know, so many different versions of a shot, but completely different. Like, okay, so I'll start here, I'll track around here, I can go over here, boom, 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 boom. I think that's what helped us keep doing it, to be honest.
Because it's really important having that drive, like you say, to keep going. And what also I think will have been nice is you sending it to Will and then him looking at it and going, oh, that works. So you're already seeing it being edited as you're going, which means you can look at that and go, oh, if we did this shot, oh, if we did this, this will add something more to it. So suddenly you had that extra team member who wasn't there on set. It wasn't judging you for going, should we try this? Let me put it on the ground. Let me put it up here. And there's so much stuff that you don't use, that's totally fine. But like you say, when you're on a movie set, and as directors are very rarely on a movie set practicing with cameras and chucking them around, so then you don't do certain stuff sometimes in case the crew will go, what, you don't swing that around like that, what are you doing? Whereas you had the perfect opportunity, both of you, to test. And I imagine, Tori, the same for you with the performance, to go, I'm just going to try something here, right? Talk us through that.
As an actor, you know, I personally have hated watching myself back. And so if I've ever had the opportunity to kind of watch the rushes or anything, I've probably erred away from it. But this, I had to watch it back, because also I was the only other sounding board on set for Matt. So he would want me to kind of review stuff with him to see if actually it was working or not. So he didn't feel so alone in the process. So actually, like, the fact that I forced myself to kind of watch everything back was just a massive learning curve for me as an actor, because I could see, okay, that shit, that's not reading at all. Or, ooh, too much, Tori.
Which I think is so important for actors as well, though, to take yourself out of it and almost like look at things like a director as well. Yeah. Like, okay, so why isn't this working? What piece of movement or whatever
How
can I do
you
to
use
help
your
that?
Body in the frame? You know, as an actor, you're sort of like, you get the chance to learn how to keep the frame alive, you know, so it's just sort of those little sort of, and because I guess a lot of it was no dialogue and I had no one else to react off. So it was all about reaction. It was all about my situation, my immediate surroundings, and how I'm reacting to that and how that reads on camera, which as just a lesson as an actor was gold.
Yeah, visual storytelling for actors is priceless and sort of not really taught. And it's only when you really start, you step onto the other side of the monitor and really start to scrutinize the movement and the piece, and as you said, like keeping the frame alive, it's so important.
Well, I don't know about you, Matt, but when I started to direct, it instantly made me a better actor because you suddenly went, what was I doing? Oh, you suddenly see things differently. You understand camera moves. It's like it opens your mind. And now, Tori, for you, stepping on an X set, even though obviously you've been involved massively in all the films you've made, it can only enhance you as a performer / director / producer, all the things that you both were doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I also tried to film one scene because I was like, if you can do it, I can do it.
So, I don't really know. Of course, you can say that, but yeah, okay.
it's right
at the beginning, one of the shots. So, like, we needed like some soldiery people. You know, just the case, like torches and stuff. So
going through the woods, right?
Yeah. So that had to be me. So we kind of wanted this POV. So that's our dog flapping our ears. We needed like these POV shots of like, so maybe it's, you know, a version of Tori and there's the soldier. So the idea was that Tori was going to do that.
I was running through and I was shooting my own POV. Turned out that wasn't good enough.
Will sent that back, to be fair. He's like, you do this again?
So it's really good, dear. It's really good. Will, would you mind? No.
So we swapped. You ended up being one of the soldiers looking for yourself, and I was you.
Yeah.
Is that how it worked? Because I did wonder how that happened. Because I thought, Tori must have shot this because that's not Tori. Right. But no, you put in a different outfit and ran through the woods. Okay.
I think it was maybe a tiny bit where actually it was fairly still, the camera. And that was kept in. I was allowed to shoot that while you were a bit more obvious.
But there's another bit, when you were in the van, but we'd set it up on a tripod occasionally, and then we'd add a little bit of the movement in it. So like there's bits when you're in the van, so I had to wander around with a torch outside, and then Tori's in the van, so we had to put that on the tripod basically. And then add a little bit of movement to keep it, because the whole thing is
that's the bit at night when the light comes across.
How proud do you feel that you two have done this, you've achieved this?
We haven't really thought about it, I think, in a nice way. I think because it's slightly terrifying, to be perfectly honest. I don't think I've ever been this worried about a film coming out, because it was just two of us. And the thing is, I know what we did, not in a bad way, but as in like what we managed to put together, considering neither of us are technical, is kind of extraordinary. Mm. I'm not saying the film is or anything like that, but as in like what we technically put together is sort of ridiculous for us. The people who know us, we know we are not technical. Giles, you know, even at the beginning of this podcast, us trying to work our own computer and things like that, ridiculous, you know.
But yet you shot a whole movie. I love it. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So yeah, from that point of view, massively proud. But I think now we're slightly terrified.
It's the worry, isn't it, when you release any kind of film, that there's so many horrible people who just decide to write horrible things. And even if a film is brilliant, there's always some idiot, some horror. And I say that in the worst possible way, because these people are idiots. What else have you got to do with your life but give a shit review? Do you know what? People worked hard for this. Fuck off. Jog on. Do one. And I think whenever we put anything out there, we are there to be judged and vilified. And it does make us have a much thicker skin. It does. But I understand, because you're putting this out, you know, when people have seen your past work or whatever, and it's like you say, we just shot this on my iPhone, please forgive us. But you should be really proud, you know, in my opinion.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, thanks. Good. That's all we wanted. It was like, this is not going to be the greatest film in the world. Of course, no film is. It's not going to please everyone. We just wanted to stand up and people go, yeah, cool. I'll be very happy with that.
You should be. Yeah. What have you learnt then? Obviously, you've told us loads there, but moving forward now, what are the things you learnt shooting on an iPhone that you could sum up a little bit for us? Or just shooting a movie in general?
Oh, summing up is not our special, but we'll I don't know.
Rambling madness, please.
Yeah, to be honest, I think the main thing that I learn lots of things, but one of the things is for me, it's movement of the camera hugely, because I've always I like sort of older films like the 70s and things. So like The Isle, they're quite static. It's more like sort of looking at sort of pictures or paintings and things, and letting the actors, you know, play in there. But I think this really taught me a lot about the importance of like not moving the camera for its own sake, but like really being in sync with the characters and like and being able to kind of help their journey sort of just with slight little movements or like the kind of the angle things. It just really, really thinking about that more, but I wouldn't have known that until I'd done it. And sort of like, I'd sort of, it sounds a bit wanky, but I kind of felt whilst we were filming the scene, if that makes sense. Mm. So, and kind of to go with it rather than kind of looking at things so technically.
Yeah.
I had to sort of trust that that was going to happen, hopefully, if I'd set all the things right on the Filmic Pro app. And then just sort of be fully, properly in the moment, which is not like me at all, to be honest. You know, to not have a storyboard and just go with things was really liberating. Yeah. And I learned so much because of that. Like, forced myself to go, look, this is what I need to make the film work, the scene work. Now let's just play. And to do that and to like be properly thinking in the moment rather than going, on my storyboard, it says this. Which is my usual sort of style. I think it's just a better, much better film for it. You know, if I'd done this with other things, I would definitely certainly do it. Not saying I'm going to be the camera person all the time, but just kind of understanding the, sort of the organic feeling of what the camera can do. I think having it in your hands, even if you just, you know, your director doesn't do that normally, just to experiment with things, I think is just immeasurably.
Important.
Going with that. Powerful.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's all right. I totally agree. The only time I can get hold of the camera, I love it. It feels this wonderful power, doesn't it? You're not in power, but the power of the camera, and you can see it in a different way. Even if the DP always does that, or the camera operator's got hold of it, it's nice when you do it and you sort of go, oh wow, okay, it feels good. So the same with the iPhone, whatever it is you're holding, and I imagine you had some sort of contraption around your iPhone as well, so that it did feel like that, and it really is important. I totally agree with that. It does make your mind think differently, and I love the fact you're free to just go, I'm going to play, I'm going to direct, I'm going to find things and see what happens. And that's a wonderful place to be. It's opened you up massively. I think it's great. Tori, what about same sort of question for you? What have you learned from this?
I think as an actor, I've always been quite nervous about A, sort of trusting myself and my instincts, but also shy to ask for like another take, you know, shy to kind of allowing myself to kind of play and really explore. And so often, you know, there isn't the time necessarily for it. So, you know, very much often on set, it's kind of like, you know, this is your moment. You got to hit it. This now is the chance. So it was so lovely to kind of have that indulgence as an actor to kind of go, yeah, actually, can we go again? Can we do that again?
I mean, it shouldn't really be an indulgence, you know, as in the actor, obviously, like a massive cog in the wheel of the storytelling. So, you know, I think, and I remember from my acting days, you kind of go, okay, cool, we'll do.
Yeah,
well, I'll do that. That's fine.
Okay,
and then you go, look, I've had an idea, now I've done it.
Yeah.
Just.
I think as actors, we're so keen to please all the time. I know I certainly am. And, you know, to not rock the boat and not be difficult and, which is all very important stuff, and you should still be lovely and not an asshole. But, you know, but actually this is your time to kind of do the best that you can for
do the job that you've been paid.
Yeah, exactly. For the film.
Yeah. And actually, I think most directors would probably go, okay, cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, respect that. I go, okay, if you think you can do something better than, not better, but as in different, yeah, than like an angle on the story, great, let's do that.
And also, if you don't, as a director, and if an actor comes to you and says, oh, no, look, I think I found it. If you don't give them another take at that point, they might not trust you again. They might not want to do that. And it's so important to let, even if you don't use it, even if you know and they know afterwards, oh, that didn't work, I'm so sorry. That's totally fine, because there might have been a shot in there you could use in the edit. There might have been anything, or it might be the breakthrough that the actor needs to find that performance for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's really important to do that. I agree. And obviously on indie films, there's often, even on, you know, big movies, there's often no time. But I think it's important you do that. Same with the DP, same with sound sometimes. You've got to go, sometimes you make the choice, we haven't got time, I'm so sorry. This we could do in 8 hours sound, I really hate doing that. But if a performance, camera move, sometimes you should look at that. So yeah, I love that. That's great. Wow, I mean, it's an incredible journey. I love this. I love that you've gone and made a movie in lockdown, and it's still released in lockdown a year later, almost to the day.
I think we worked it out. Yeah, I think it's about 2 days shy of, I think we started writing on the 25th of March or something like that.
That's almost to the day. That's a week before. Yeah.
So, and again, also the fastest we've ever, like, not just, well, written the film, made it, and it's come out as well. We've never had anything, you know, it's usually, okay, so you make it and then have a year of faffing around it. Okay, go to festivals and then, okay, not faffing around.
No, it is faffing around.
It's faffing, yeah. Okay, so maybe we need to go to festivals so we can go get some reviews. Yeah. And then after that, we can take it to the distributor to prove that there's an audience, that kind of stuff. So it's kind of bonkers,
but it's wonderful for your next film. It's wonderful for your trajectory, and I think I think it should have inspired many more people to just go shoot something, because the more you shoot, the better we become. It's proven, right? You've learned so much from this, whether you're better or not, who knows? But the fact is, we feel good about ourselves from doing something, and that just going out there and shooting anything is so important.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And it's doable these days as well. I mean, you know, if I can do that, anyone can do that. I'm not trying to put myself down, but genuinely, if you have a phone, we had like a £120 gimbal, which is not hugely expensive considering what it did. And that's what we had, you know. Yeah. It's doable. It's not easy. I'm not trying to make it sound like it's easy as well. None of this.
Filmmaking is not easy, generally, but it is doable. If you want to do this, you probably want to be a filmmaker, or you are a filmmaker. You can do this yourself if you want to. If you want to go make a doc, you want to make a short, you want to just go make another feature because you haven't made one for a while, you're struggling in that. You can do it. It's proven. Matthew and Tori have done it. Infinitum Subject Unknown is out now. It's super incredible. Go watch it. Starring Tori, amazing performance. Connor Pill and Ian McKellen, also cameo in the movie. Notice that's a cameo for you there.
Thanks. Yeah.
Just to make sure. But to confirm, they shot this by themselves in lockdown, just the two of them. Incredible. Links to this will be in the show notes. Do click it, do support. It deserves all that love and support you can give. And follow the guys on their Twitter page and say you listen to them on the Filmmakers Podcast. And either you can't wait to watch a film or you've already watched it. Your Twitter handles are?
Fizz and Ginger, or I'm M Butler Hart.
And I am at Tori Butler Hart.
Yes, you are.
Oh, well done. Yeah, because I think the last time you didn't know, did you?
No. As Infinitum as well. I think Infinitum is Infinitum SU, as in Subject Unknown. That would be nice as well. If you like it, please do.
But also, just go follow Infinitum SU, at Infinitum SU on Twitter and Insta, or just...
It's on Instagram as well, but yeah, I think it's Infinitum Subject Unknown.
Great. Regardless of whatever you're doing in your life, if you've listened this far and Matthew and Tori have given you all this love and knowledge for free, the least you can do is follow them on these platforms. The least you can do. Amazing. Thank you everyone so much for listening thus far. This has been amazing. I've really enjoyed this. I always love talking to you too, and I love that you're part of the Filmmaking Podcast gang anyway, by obviously hosting events and you joining us on the Clubhouse events, which are every Thursday at the moment. You'll be joining us this Thursday, I imagine, which is
indeed, absolutely
perfect. Good. So come and ask some questions there if you've got any more questions to ask about this, because the film will be out then. You can watch it and then ask some direct questions. Please do. Clubhouse every Thursday, 6:30 p.m. GMT time, which is English time. So therefore it'll be 11:30 in Hollywood land. So come and join us on that. And also The Wrap-Up is our weekly newsletter now, which is going out every week, which is a roundup of all the entertainment. Well, not all of them, that's ridiculous. We haven't got that much time on our hands. But it's just a nice wrap-up of some of the cool news created by us that you might like. If you're not already signed up for that, do sign up for it. Links to all that is in the show notes and our Twitter page, at Filmmakers Pod. We're on Instagram as well, The Filmmakers Podcast. Loads of stuff going on there. You can follow me at Giles Alderson, so do that if you're not already. Remember, you can go out there and make your indie film, even on an iPhone, just as Matthew and Tori Butler Hart have done. You can go out there now and do it. And if you're lucky enough to rise up and do well, it is your duty
to send the elevator back down.
Boom, you're in. Thank you so much, Matthew and Tori. You're both legends, honestly. Thank you. Well done. I'm so proud of you, honestly. Really, really.
Oh, thank you.
Really.
Well, likewise, Giles, likewise.
Yes, but I didn't make a film in...
Yeah, you did.
The Stranger in the Bed. I've literally just done some pickups on Thursday, and yeah, final pickups now. It's all good. We're going ahead with the grade and sound mix.
I can't wait to hear about it.
Yeah, it might be ready in time for Cannes because they've moved that forward, so we might just make that. So super. So anyway, more news on that to come. But for now, thank you everyone so much for listening. You're all superstars. Go make your films. Make it happen. Bye, Matt. Bye, Tori.
Bye, everyone. Bye, Giles.
See you, everyone. Take care. Bye.